goddamn howdy do, y'all. We got a birthday alert. Fire up the shrimp horn. It's our 25th episode.
Oh, of it's Gem happy Hunt. Birthday, yeah. Gem Hunt.
We're 25 podcasts old. How do you feel about that?
Wow.
Wild.
A lot has happened in the span of 25 episodes.
25?
Yeah, this is 25.
Yeah, we've done 25 episodes.
Can you believe it?
And in the time that we started, we've gained 25 listeners. We went from 0 to 25.
That's true. I think we have more than that, but
that's pretty great.
We're going to make some stickers soon, so keep your eyes peeled, your pants down or whatever, because stickers coming soon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, well, if you didn't know, this is the Gem Hunt podcast, our family horror podcast, where we select a horror film with 5,000 votes or less on IMDb. We watch it. We sleep on it. We might do a bit of research. And then we come on here and we talk about that shit and decide whether it's a horror gem or a turd or somewhere in between, which happens quite often. Anyway, I'm Cody, and I know a lot about poontang, but I don't know a lot about women.
Oh, fuck. Mm-hmm. I'm Beth, and I like to suck on a tomato.
I'm Buggy, and I don't care if she farts Chanel number 5.
Channel number 5.
Hell yeah. Okay, true. First of all, sorry we're a week late on this one. Someone around here was on vacation. I wonder who that was.
What? No way.
That's not the only reason.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not why.
What?
Anyway, how was
I was on vacation.
How was your trip? Where'd you go?
I went to Cabo, Mexico, and I had a great time. It was like supposed to be kind of a chill vacation, but a couple of like things happened that ended up being pretty funny, but were also like kind of an ordeal. I rode a camel, which was very fun. I did not know how tall camels are.
Hell yeah.
And I rode an ATV, which that was kind of like the ordeal aspect of it. I like don't even have a driver's license, and I had a moment of like, why am I driving an ATV right now? This is insane.
You can drive, for the record.
I can't. I just don't have like my license. So
you
I was
don't
just
need
like,
a license for an ATV.
I don't know.
You just need a backwards hat.
And I was very sad because I couldn't bring my phone. I get for the ATV why I can't, but I wanted to like take a picture with this camel. And they took a picture of me with the camel, and I like fed it a carrot, and I wanted that, but it's
oh,
okay.
I'm like, I haven't seen that because you don't have it.
I don't have it. I had to pay for it, but I get it. It's I can't blame anybody for that. I'm just sad. But it was a great trip. Beautiful place.
Hell yeah.
Great food. Lovely time.
Who are
Love
we?
Love Mexico.
I don't know. I don't go anywhere.
Even though like Cabo's not really Mexico. It's like the most touristy place ever.
Sure, but it's still Mexico. I'm just saying.
Beautiful.
Okay, so back to what we were talking about. So really the reason we are late is we got busy. I've been a bit fucked up due to the science experiments being conducted on me. Feeling a bit shitty, but I'm better now, and we're rocking and rolling, and we're recording a podcast. A couple notes before we get really rolling here. We have watched a few movies this time since we last spoke with you. Mm-hmm. We went to Sinners, as we noted. I went in with my guard up because it's a big movie, big budget movie, a lot of hype, and I'm often let down by movies like that. So I went in skeptical, but I gotta say, it was real fun.
Yeah, I agree. Have you seen it yet, Bubs?
No, but I
yeah, it
to.
Was way better than I was. Well, I expected it to be good, but I expected it to maybe be like too actiony for my blood, and you can make fun of me for that.
I
but
was
I just am not. I could see it. It's just you know, I'm not an action
she
guy.
She doesn't like when people walk or run in films.
Yeah, running.
Stay still.
She prefers just close ups on people's faces.
Running
dialogue.
So hard for me
I like nudity.
Yeah, she likes bush.
I like bush and silence or dialogue.
And I like bush and silence. That's what I
bush.
Like.
Yeah. So anyway. There was some real cool music in it. It was like had a big music component, which I thought was cool. The characters were great overall. Yeah, I'd say check it out if you haven't seen it yet. We watched Daddy's Head, which was kind of a fun, creepy, supernatural monster deal. A little understated, but not bad. And we took a crack at one potential Gem Hunt pick that we actually didn't go with, but we might at some point. It's called Poison for the Fairies. the Mexican evil creepy kid movie from 1986, although it kind of feels a bit older than that.
Yeah, it was a Mexican gothic.
Yeah.
Which that's, you know, yeah. Buggy will get into that, but we were kind of looking for the gothic.
Yeah, we just spoil my special time, Mom.
Oh, but the movie, I mean, the movie is, you know, it, that's it how you got to this movie.
It's true. I asked ChatGPT to help me.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Oh, for fuck.
So, yeah, I don't want to say too much about Poison for the Fairies since we might do an episode on it, but it was an interesting film. Speaking of interesting films, Buggy selected the film for us this episode. What do you got lined up for us to talk about?
Oh, my God. Okay. The movie I picked for this week's Gem Hunt is a little film called Poor Pretty Eddie, made in 1975. And it's, to say the least, a doozy.
Yeah.
But it's a doozy. I'm glad I picked this movie. I was kind of conflicted, wondering if, like, this would be a good movie to pick, but I decided not to stray away from it because I think there's a lot of interesting, you know, thematic, I guess, like, things present in this film. A lot of cool cinematography. I think everyone in this movie acted really well, as we'll discuss further into this. So, yeah, I didn't want to shy away from it just because it's kind of, like, a difficult or maybe controversial topic.
Yeah, this is a wild pick, bro.
It is.
It's kind of an excellent Gem Hunt selection, I gotta say. Although there'll be a discussion about whether or not it's an appropriate selection, and we'll get to that. So, yeah, props for the crazy pick. And I think you kind of answered my question, but did you really stumble on this with ChatGPT?
I did. So I was having a very hard time finding, like, a movie that sounded intriguing that sort of, like, fit the requirement or, like, the category I was looking for. Because my overall goal was to find, like, a movie that, like, is thematically, like, reminiscent of the, like, subgenre Southern Gothic, which ended up being a lot more challenging than I had, like, previously suspected. I feel like there's not actually a lot of movies that fit into this subgenre that aren't, like, extremely popular or, like, mm-hmm. could be applied to this podcast.
Totally.
So I did, at a certain point, I desperately asked ChatGPT, I went, can you find any movies that fit this requirement, but, like, have, like, not as many votes, like, that fit our requirement for the amount of IMDb votes? That aren't, like, as known, that don't really have, like, a cult following, even though this movie does sort of have a cult following and is considered a cult classic. And ChatGPT came through, actually.
What do you know?
Should we just turn the keys over?
Yeah. I think so. Honestly, she was very helpful with this whole process. Shout out.
Thanks, ChatGPT.
Thank
you. Actually, GPT, but I never say that. I always say ChatGPT because it just sounds way better.
Gooey poop turd.
Yeah, what are you saying different?
ChatGPT versus
you're saying B?
Yeah. Because I don't like to call it ChatGPT. Like, it's like an awkward thing for, like, my mouth. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, speech impediment shit.
You don't like to have pee in your mouth?
I don't.
Okay, so yeah, Poor Pretty Eddie. That's our movie.
Mm-hmm.
This apparently bounced around between a lot of drive-ins after release with a variety of titles
aimed at
finding a footing in various exploitation markets, and it never really found that footing. So some of the titles that you might see it under: Redneck County Rape.
Fuck. Yep.
Heartbreak Motel, Black Vengeance. And these were all kind of, like, trying to target different markets. And some of them even have slightly different plot outlines. So, for example, Heartbreak Motel features none of the sex and violence that we see in Poor Pretty Eddie. It's like a more straightforward drama,
which
I think is pretty interesting.
Huh. Like, how does it work then?
I don't know.
I think it's just, like, probably a drama about,
it's like,
you know,
focused on the characters more than, like, some of the weird shit that we see in this film. But yeah, let's talk about some details. As you noted, released in 1975, directed by David Wirth. David Wirth went on to do Bloodsport, as well as The Man with the Screaming Brain, which is a cheesy Bruce Campbell vehicle that came out in, I don't know, 90s, 2000s? I can't remember.
It's a great name,
though. It's a silly movie. It was also directed by Richard Robinson, so we had co-directors here. Written by B.W. Sandefur, based on a Jean Genet play called The Balcony, and I didn't know anything about Jean Genet. You have a couple notes about Jean Genet that you want to throw in here?
Well, he liked little girls.
Oh, shit. But
he was kind of a cool, you know, civil rights activist from France, and the Panthers actually brought him to the States to speak, and he was like buddies with Angela Davis and stuff. But then it also turns out that he's into like 11-year-olds. So
typical woke DEI hire.
Tragic.
70s France, you know? It's hard French to separate people. That. Yeah.
I guess so.
But yeah, cool guy, really cool writer, very politically left and forward thinking. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's interesting. It kind of makes me think of some of the racial dynamic stuff that we're going to talk about in a different light, knowing that he wrote the work it was based on.
Oh, yeah. So this is starring Leslie Uggams as Liz, Shelley Winters as Bertha, Michael Christian as Eddie Collins, the titular Eddie, Ted Cassidy as Kino. I saw somebody refer to him as the Man Mountain, which I liked a lot. There's a song by the band Thrones called Man Mountain, so I appreciated that. Dub Taylor plays Justice of the Peace Floyd, and we got good old Slim Pickens as Sheriff Orville. Sheriff Orville.
That's about right, though, for how that would be how.
Slim Pickens is a crazy name.
Great name. Yeah. Dub Taylor? But like if Dub Taylor was saying
kind of like
Slim
Rip
Pickens.
Torn. I feel like Rip Torn and Rip Torn. Slim Pickens are like
Slim
up
Pickens
there.
Is crazy.
Totally. Yeah.
Like that's like genuinely like.
I think it might be his name, too, whereas Rip Torn, that's not his real name.
Yeah. The cinematography was also done by David Wirth. The music and composer, Grant Boatwright, and we got some music by Red, White, and Bluegrass, and then Larry Cox was the music producer. And here's an interesting note about the producer of this film. So this was produced by a notorious Atlanta pornographer named Michael Thevis, known as the Scarface of Porn.
What?
He published 2 Ed Wood's porn novels, which I didn't even know Ed Wood's wrote porn novels. So.
Ed Wood?
Ed Wood, yeah. Okay. Did I say Woods?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it.
No, I'm just making sure we're on the same page.
But apparently, he also sold child and animal porn.
Animal porn.
He was involved
That's
in...
the one?
No, I'm upset. I'm more upset by child porn, but just the idea that there is an actual category where there could be like a mass to sell.
Yeah, of course.
Because I
was.
Know people buy kitty porn. That's
you
know,
yeah, you
You
would
don't
know.
Think they were filming that Mr. Hands shit?
Yeah, I guess so.
He was also involved in gangland executions, burnt down a warehouse of a man who talked shit about him, ultimately went to prison, busted out, and murdered a former associate who testified against him with a shotgun. And apparently this was all discussed on the Blu-ray special features. Which
oh, we
didn't,
watch them.
Yeah, we didn't get around to watching those, but keep that in mind as you're watching this film. That's the producer.
He busted out of prison, too.
And then killed
somebody.
I
went back to prison, as I understand.
Well, yeah.
I didn't, because you told me you had like some fun stuff about, real fun, animal and kitty porn.
Super but told
amazing.
You it was going to be fun.
I didn't look into it, but I did see that there was speculation that this film might, one of the motives for it might have been money laundering.
Yeah. Usually,
making it was a way to launder some money.
The 70s horror landscape was full of like mob money laundering for sure. So I buy it. I could see that.
Yeah.
Where can you watch this goddamn son of a bitch? FlixFling Plex. We watched it on Fossum the first time. Fossum sucks.
Not
Sorry, Fossum.
Yeah.
It's free on YouTube right now for all those YouTube people that like to watch movies on there. You can rent it on Amazon, rent it on Apple TV, or you could go find a Blu-ray and DVD. We went and rented and rewatched it on the Blu-ray. Looks pretty good on the Blu-ray.
She was watching it on Apple TV and the quality looked pretty good there too when she paid to rent it.
Maybe that's the version on there.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, definitely, we'll talk about that. But the quality definitely varies depending on where you get it.
Well, yeah.
Viva physical media.
Hell yeah. Okay, what's this movie about?
Okay, I'm going to try to not, like, get too bogged down by the details because there is a lot. And I think many of the scenes in this movie should be like better discussed in our analysis portion, because there's just so many like key interesting aspects to a lot of these scenes and a lot of interesting symbolism. But the like bare bones of the story is it's about this lady, this very talented jazz singer named Liz Weatherly, who's going on I think about like a 2-week vacation, just to like get away from the fame, get away from, you know, kind of like the outside world and relax. And unfortunately for her, her car breaks down. You know, she's by herself in an isolated, like, back roads, you know, kind of, like, undisclosed area in Georgia. Right? Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Definitely Georgia.
And her car breaks down conveniently by, like, this old hunting lodge, I think. I think it breaks down by
inn.
That.
It's like an inn.
Yeah, it's like an inn, like,
yeah,
hunting lodge.
Cabins that you can rent and stuff with, like, yeah. a main... like gathering space
yeah.
kind of.
So her car breaks down near that point. And already like her introduction to this like motel is pretty unsettling. There is this character whose name is Kino. And he's like this very tall, intimidating man with this huge scar on his face. And I believe he cuts the head of a chicken off.
Yeah, that's like yeah, right.
That's
like,
real.
Yeah.
That's
she,
a
like,
real chicken head
door,
yeah. by the way.
It is.
So we got that going for it.
There's a lot, you know, in lieu of also something we just learned. Interesting choice to kill a chicken. But yeah, so she's already like pretty uncomfortable when she first enters this environment. Kino brings her to like the main, you know, like lobby of this like motel building. And there's this man there and his name's Eddie Collins. And already, like, you can tell he's kind of a douche. He's, like, this very, like, he's, like, kind of, like, hot, but not really. You can tell he's supposed to be, like, the stud, the young stud that works at this motel. And you can already tell the dynamic between him and Kino is not great. He's very rude to Kino. He kind of treats him on, like, a subhuman level. And very quickly, even without talking to Liz, we can tell he's very enamored by her already, and he's putting on the charm. And things take a more intense turn as, like, Liz is getting, you know, set up in the motel since her car doesn't work. It broke down and Eddie's offering to help fix her car with Kino. She's also, like, kind of reluctant. We can tell, like, she doesn't really want to stay at this hotel. She wants to get out of there as soon as possible.
She's also rude.
Yeah, and you can tell also her behavior, at least especially in the beginning. She's kind of snooty about this whole situation.
Mm-hmm. Snooty is the perfect word for
it. I think also, like, she's going into this situation pretty apprehensive. She's a woman by herself alone. Mm-hmm. She just saw a chicken get their head cut off.
She's black, and it's rural Georgia
in
1970.
It's rural Georgia. It's just, like, there's a lot. You can tell, like, she's on her toes. Like, she's on edge. She's ready for anything at this moment. But she eventually, like, admits it's probably for the best if she just stays here while they fix her car. Because she doesn't really have a choice, also. There's really no other option for her. So, as she's signing this paper, Eddie sees her signature and recognizes that she's the famous singer Liz Weatherly. That's her stage name. Her full name's Elizabeth. And that's when he kind of, like, freaks out. Like, he gets a lot more flirty. He's much more insistent and pushy that Liz stays because Eddie himself is an aspiring star. He's an Elvis impersonator, and he really, really wants to make it big in Hollywood. So we can kind of tell he sees this as an opportunity for himself to potentially climb the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
He takes Liz to this cabin. He's like, this one has AC, but I'll give it to you for free. Usually I charge $2 extra. This cabin is also like fucking horrible. It's full of like all these like pornography like photos and like beers everywhere.
It's like his private jerk space.
Literally
is what it looks
like. Where
it's like pictures
he, like,
of
goes
tits
to jerk
and
off
and
like
bottles
drink.
Yeah.
And he's like, all special for you. Sorry, I wasn't like expecting company.
Yeah.
And he's like super weird and he won't stop. Like you can tell like he's lustful over her.
Mm-hmm.
And not just over her, over like what he thinks she represents, which is like his ticket out of here. That's very clear from the beginning. And then from then on, we're sort of introduced to the other, I think, most important character besides Liz herself, who is Bertha.
Bertha.
Now, Bertha will get her own special section about, like, all of her strange dynamics she has with Liz. But I think that is the most intriguing aspect of this movie, is their dynamic. Bertha, our introduction to her is I'm pretty sure she's just drunk getting ready in her room. And the room also, like, there's an emphasis on the room because you can see, like, old Hollywood pictures and pinup posters of Bertha. And you can tell also just from her style that she's obviously, like, a washed-up, like, Tinseltown lady.
She's
like,
got some great robes.
She does, and a lot of feather boas, which is, like, always a given for some, like, bitter old woman. Gotta have a feather boa. It's very necessary.
That's and some Sunset Boulevard, yeah.
She's also very insecure. She's looking in the mirror and she's telling herself that she's an ugly piece of shit and an ugly old hag. And she freaks out when she finds out that Liz is staying here and goes and finds Eddie. We can also tell, like, she's washed up as fuck. She's drunk all the time. She's mad that she didn't get her, I don't even know, her Bloody Mary this morning. Like, she's having a hard time. She's depressed. She's insecure. It's really not a great scene, it seems, for Bertha.
She's also boinking Eddie.
And, she is, well, yes. She's
and boinking the place
Eddie.
Is her, like, it's called Bertha's something. Yeah. Like, she is the boss.
She's the boss. She's the big lady. The big lady boss.
The big lady girl
The big
boss.
Lady boss. I have, like, I think a quote. She plays her role as the debaucherous matron and sugar mama to Eddie. So it's also very clear that her and Eddie have not just, like, a friendship going on. It's much more than that. It's very sexual. She's super insecure about the fact that Liz is here and makes a bunch of racist remarks about Liz and how she needs to get the fuck out of here. And Eddie puts the moves on, puts the charm on, and sort of gets Bertha to calm down, telling her, look, Liz is going to be gone at most by later tonight. It's going to be fine. She's not going to be here for that long. Like, why are you worried? Don't worry about anything. It's all going to be great. We're going to have dinner. Don't worry about a thing, Bertha. Drink your drink. Let me make out with you.
Let me lick your face.
Let me lick you and slobber your face up for a little bit to make you feel better. Yeah. So there's like some in-between ominous scenery going on. Liz also has a camera and she's taking photos out in the forest. But I think, like, the main scene after that is the dinner scene when we're introduced to more characters. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I have to look at my notes. We're introduced to the sheriff, Sheriff Orville, his, like, deputy, or I don't even know if that's his deputy or who that is.
But I feel it's his son. Somebody he's somebody who's, like, developmentally disabled that he's responsible
yes.
for.
And always slapping around.
Shepherding,
and I don't
yeah.
remember what his name is, unfortunately, but... Because he's never really, like, referred to by his name. He's basically
probably Cletus.
Yeah, he's just called, like, you stupid piece of shit.
Yeah, he just gets, like, slapped in the back of the head.
God damn it, stop doing that. Not in front of company.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the vibe between Sheriff Orville and his son. He's introduced. I don't know exactly why he's there. I'm not sure if he saw Liz's car or if he just regularly stops by at Bertha's. It seems like he does.
Yeah, they're like buddies.
Yeah, they have like a friendship dynamic going on. And Liz insists that Orville stays for dinner with his son. And the dinner scene is also very interesting. There's like a lot to sort of dissect there. A lot of interesting dynamics going on. We can tell already in this moment Liz does not want to be here. She wants to get out of this, like, dinner, this situation as soon as possible. She keeps asking Eddie, like, when her car is going to be ready. And this is also, I think, like, a big turning point in the film because the dinner party really sets up the remaining events and the sort of mess that occurs because mm-hmm. this is when Eddie reveals to Liz that he wants to be a star, that he himself is a very talented musician and he has this little sparkly Elvis get up. He's very, like, he's very proud of himself. He's trying to impress Liz. He keeps screaming at Orville for making, like, certain backhanded comments about Liz. And also just pointing out the fact that it is shocking that Liz is here for, like, a vacation or is just chilling here because this really isn't, like, a place where Black people really hang out. And Eddie's very embarrassed and just, like, tells Orville to shut up. Bertha comes into the room wearing, like, the craziest fit. Like, she's obviously peacocking. She has great outfits to, like, try to make sure Eddie's not straying away from her gaze. And that's, like, a very important aspect of Bertha's character. Her insecurity is really, like, what motivates her to do what she does and her fear of being alone. And we can tell she's, like, very... I keep saying we can tell a lot, but whatever. She's very desperate for Eddie's love and attention and is fearful of him straying away. And Eddie performs his little weird Elvis performance. Liz is trying very hard to smile, but we can also tell that she just doesn't like this performance. This is all really weird. She's very uncomfortable. Eddie also obviously is not well mentally. Before he plays his song, he does this weird speech thanking everyone for being here. And he also drops his guitar.
Yeah, I love that.
That part is, there's a little comedy in this.
There's a little comedy.
Because you can tell that we're making fun. Like, the villains, these white hick people, are not good. And they're the butt of the joke in most instances. There's just also some other dynamics occurring in the movie. So yeah, he does his performance. He's very proud of himself. Liz simply states it's not her taste. You know, it's not her type of music, but that he's better than a lot of people she's heard before. And as Eddie's getting ready to, like, go to bed and rest, Orville, the sheriff, stops him and basically says, like, oh my God, Eddie, Liz was making eyes at you, like, the entire time. She's super hot for you. Liz also asks Eddie, like, can I go home? Is my car ready? And Eddie says something on the lines of, like, sorry, it's taking a little longer than I thought. You really, like, messed up some part of your car. It's going to take till tomorrow, but I promise you'll be out of here by tomorrow morning. Liz is reluctant, but she doesn't really, like, have a choice. So she's just going with it. And Eddie, now hearing from Orville that Liz has the hots for him, takes this opportunity to, like, in his eyes, seduce Liz. Before that, Bertha also tries to stop him, saying, like, she's the only one for him. They're meant to be together. Eddie's like, you're drunk and you're stupid. Go away. Especially, like, since Liz has entered the picture, too, we can see how, like, fed up Eddie's becoming with his relationship with Bertha and how, like, ultimately unsatisfying it is. It seems like he thinks he's, like, better than everyone here and he's, like, meant for greater things. Long story short, this leads
That's the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, long story short, this leads to, like, the actual part of the movie. Okay, but I think this is important.
You're setting up that, yeah.
Where Eddie commits a terrible rape.
Yeah.
He rapes Liz, and it's very horrifying.
Yeah.
I have to say, I don't necessarily feel like it was exploitive, but it's still extremely visceral and it goes on for a very long time. But it doesn't feel like it's meant for the male gaze or anything like weird like that. It's very obviously horrific and like violating. There's also some weird music choices made.
Oh, for sure.
This scene. And in between the rape, there's also these shots of dogs having sex and all of these hicks, like, yelling. Which also kind of adds to, like, the overall, like, brutality, but also uncomfortable, unsettlingness of the scene. And then that eventually snowballs into this, like, it's basically just, like, a vacation from a nightmare. It's like, not only does Liz have to try to, like, figure out a way to get the fuck out of here, she's trying to, like, find an ally in this situation. She can't find one. She tries to talk to Bertha about what happened after it occurs, and Bertha basically tells her, like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
If you try to, like, get my Eddie arrested, I will testify anywhere. I actually have the quote. When she's talking to Liz, she says, if push comes to shove, I'll stand up in any courtroom and I'll say how innocent poor little Eddie is and what a vicious black little bitch you are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was rough.
She says very horrible things, but she makes it very clear to Liz she doesn't have an ally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it becomes sort of a revenge / horrifying hick, like, nightmare where Liz is trying to, like, fight against insane odds to get out of this place. She's getting backed into a corner, and Eddie is becoming increasingly erratic in his behavior and much more violent. He starts to become possessive over Liz, saying he will make a decent woman out of her, and what's hers will become his, and what's his will become hers. So it becomes very clear Eddie is not going to let Liz go. He's sticking to this, like, idea of he's going to marry Liz and they're going to become, like, this famous show couple. Like, I don't know, like, Sonny and Cher, if that's, like, what he thinks is going to fucking happen. But
obviously,
he's delusional.
Ike and Tina.
And it culminates in a very intense wedding murder scene. Some pretty intense hick brawls break out. There's also another like horrifying moment where Liz is forced to like take off her shirt because she's trying to prove that like she tries to report the crime that Eddie committed against her. And not only does the sheriff not take her seriously, no one does. And they just completely like horrifically exploit her and make fun of her and like commodify her in every sense, essentially. So that's like a brief-ish explanation, but
brief,
I never
brief
do.
Brief is one way to say it.
I never do brief explanations of anything.
I gotta say, you did a great job for mostly covering that from memory.
Yeah.
That's a lot of detail.
It is a lot.
And I have to say one thing I think you kind of touched on a couple of times, which I think is important and that will play into the, like, is this a horror movie sort of discussion is, yeah, she keeps like trying to find an ally and you realize every other character in this movie is just fucking crazy.
They're crazy.
Yeah,
they're
everyone's
awful.
It's like every corner she turns, she's like, okay, this person. And they're like, huh, little lady. And then it like gets more depraved. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Because
like,
you can also, they all have their own unity going on where they don't want this getting out. I mean, Liz is like a famous musician.
They do, but they also have their own, each one of them has their own like weird pathology.
Well,
where there are
probably
all
like 27 people in this little
town.
Exactly.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. This like new, interesting, attractive woman.
And she's black.
Yep. Okay. Time to do some analysis, also known as analysis on this thing. And here's the big topic to start with. That we talk about a lot when we watch horror movies. Is this a horror movie? So let's get into that, because I think there's arguments to be made one way or the other, depending on how you view this thing. Does anybody have any initial thoughts?
I have a couple of very short ones.
Okay.
A, it has a horror tag on IMDb.
Yep.
So I think that's like the get out of jail free card.
For sure.
And B, like Cody was saying, we watched it on shit. Some or whatever that was called. And then we watched the Blu-ray. So I saw it twice. And the second time I felt like knowing what was coming, it did feel like a horror movie. And I gotta say, cheers to the audio department for that. I feel like the soundtrack really helped for me to push it over into horror.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree. I mean, I think it's a horror film.
Because
I think this is like a thing you can debate forever, like what constitutes a horror film. But I like looked this up to like, what's the definition of the horror genre? What is that?
Okay, cool.
And it's defined by its goal to elicit strong feelings of fear, dread, and sometimes disgust or revulsion in the audience, which I would say
all of those.
This
revolted.
All of those notes.
Dread for sure.
And its tone is horrific. There, it might not have like a supernatural element of like, you know, like a ghost or a monster. But I mean, there are plenty of things that are still considered horror where there isn't like that supernatural element present. And I think like the fact that these people are so like horrific and in their way, they are monsters. They like, they are the monsters in this horror film.
It's a nightmare.
It is. It's a nightmare and it's scary and it's pretty disturbing. There's some like extremely violent imagery.
Yep.
So I think overall, yes.
Yeah, I would agree. I was on the fence initially because the bulk of the film almost plays a bit like a drama thriller, almost more drama for a lot of it. And so on a first glance, you might be like, well, where's the horror in this? If you're only focusing kind of on the dialogue, sort of the overall storyline of it. But once you really start to pick apart the pieces of this that make it horrific, you start to see it. And a lot of critics that I read noted that this is a horror film. Like pretty much every review I read put it in the horror category. And as you noted, the soundtrack really does a number on this, and the cinematography I think pushes it over the edge there. So I think it's fair to classify this as a horror without much other debate. I think, you know, I could see people kind of focusing in on the drama storyline aspect and being like, this is just like a drama thriller with some like weird scenes and interspersed. But I think the case could be made also that it's clearly a horror film. Which brings me to my second question. If it is a horror film, what's the subgenre? Which is always my favorite trivia game, because you could say it's a rape revenge film. You could say it's blaxploitation. You could say it's hicksploitation. Kind of fits into that backwoods redneck a la Texas Chainsaw Massacre, mm-hmm. Deliverance.
Mm-hmm. That's the two. Yeah. That really came
I saw
mind.
One commenter refer to this as honky whore, which I liked. I never saw that before, so putting that in my back pocket.
Dogsploitation.
Dogsploitation, yeah. What do you think? Or is it just everything in the bucket?
I think hicksploit. I mean, I feel like it had what I more call like yokel.
Yeah, yokel whore.
I think it also is like dependent on like which, because you were also saying there's like sort of different versions or different titles for
yeah,
it.
That's yeah, wild.
Sure. I think it also is like dependent on like which title you're watching, because there was like a goal to sort of bring in a black audience with this film, especially with the name Black Vengeance, and to sort of like piggyback off of the success around blaxploitation films. So I think like it could be either blaxploitation or hicksploitation. I feel like it's more leaning towards hicksploitation than anything else. But it is kind of like, I think, dependent on which title, how you view it necessarily. Like,
yeah,
there could be an argument.
If you saw it without some of this shit in it, it would just be like a weird drama.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like, which I didn't know that the titles, I knew there were different titles, but I didn't know there was like different edits that
redneck rape is crazy. Redneck country rape, sorry, that's what that version is called, which also like that title alone like kind of concerns me on like a level of like what the overall goal for this film was.
And you know, and this is probably a good time to talk about, we were kind of like, huh, I wonder, so Deliverance came out in 1972.
Yep.
Based on a 1970 novel, Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out in 74?
74.
Four.
Yeah.
So this movie it came out in 75, but it was filmed in 73.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, what was like going on that would make this sort? But it's just, you know what? Yokels are fucking scary.
They are. And I think also it just is probably one of those things where a movie like Deliverance came out and it was so popular and well received. Totally. That this became like, and also Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Hidden Nerve.
Like,
but this came out before, I mean, it was filmed before.
Right, so it's not, it's like, but it's right on the edge of like this time where like, I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is like one of the best horror films like ever made, you know, like it's like a very famous, it's like critics and like just anybody like all agree it's like a very good, disturbing film.
And I think maybe too, just, you know, zeitgeisty, not to get into like big analysis, but you know, civil rights movement, pushback, which is sort of the kind of era we're living in right now, right? Like that idea of like, we made all this progress and then out of the woodwork come all these motherfuckers who are like, I don't like your progress.
Yeah.
And if you got trapped in a little town with them, that'd be a hell of a, like at Green Room.
Oh, yeah.
Green Room
sure.
had that. Did you watch that movie?
Yes.
So good. I can't watch it again because of that sweet, sweet man who died.
Yeah.
I want to watch it again, even though it's sad.
I've seen it like three times, I think.
It's stressful, and I liked it. And what's his name? Rip. I don't want to forget his name.
He's from, like, Irish.
Anton.
Is
he Irish?
Hellman.
No, he's Russian.
Oh, you're right. He's Russian. I just forgot he plays Scotty, who's Scottish also.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
His parents like escaped the Soviet Union and to give him this American life.
Yeah, it was
but
a
anyway,
very tragic one.
Just like, I think maybe that's part of his, like, whatever's happening culturally, horror movies are always a reflection of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually out like the vanguard. And I think, yeah, that idea of like, we're making progress, but lurking in the woods are these fucking people who are boiling dogs. And and that's
watching them fuck.
Yeah.
Watching dogs fuck and then boiling them for revenge, or roasting. It might have been roasted.
Yeah. It's a soup.
Yeah, boiled. Okay.
All right. So we have a horror film here that leans exploitation / backwoods redneck, with a splash of rape revenge and blaxploitation.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, trigger warning for real.
Yeah. So the next thing we want to talk about is good old racism and rape.
Yeah, definitely, you know.
They go together.
If you don't like
a
racism
and
rape,
carriage.
Don't listen to the rest of this,
no.
I guess. But so the racism in this movie isn't subtle. It's not one of those, like, this is a subtle commentary on racism. It's just there. it's on the surface, clear as day, and it's obviously a big part of the horror of this film, being trapped as a single black woman alone in the small racist town where everyone's trying to control you and there's no way out. There's some N-bombs dropped.
Yes. Mm.
Bertha refers to Liz as a pickaninny. Sorry, I had to say it, but, you know, it's like a very pointed, like, stabbing
It's quote. Weird, too, because she seems less that way until maybe that moment, you know?
Well, she says that at the very beginning.
It
I
is
mean,
in the beginning,
she calls, she's kind of, I mean, as I said in my quote, like, I won't repeat it, but she's constantly making jibes related to this woman's, to Liz's race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Consistently the entire time.
Everyone
out of jealousy.
Is, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's the only black person in the room or maybe the town.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously with Bertha, it has to do with her own personal, there's a lot of stuff about her physicality.
Right. And her relevance to this, like, world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think this film is saying anything about racism or is it just there for the horror?
You know, now that I know what it was based on, I mean, that's really what kind of, and actually watching it a second time, we were talking about this morning, and I was like, is it racist or anti-racist? I think it is saying something. I think it is trying.
Yeah.
It's fumbling a little bit, but I think it's definitely anti-racist.
Yeah. I have a quote about this.
Oh, cool.
And it was also, it's on this Facebook post, the, like, group is Black Film History.
Do you have a Facebook?
No, oh, I could access it. It was pretty easy. But sort of in reference to not only Leslie Uggam's performance, but also just, like, her role. Her character's torment throughout the film is despicable in so many ways. But if you focus too much on that, you'll miss the mockery of everyone else in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a really great point. Well, it might not, like, hit the mark, and in some ways it does kind of come off as exploitive, or like it's a little bit like, what's it trying to say here besides yokels are bad?
Mm-hmm.
But it is like very clear that all of these like horrible white people are like the butt of jokes and like are also kind of like mocking caricatures of these like rural people. They're not presented in, like, a nice way or, like, a polished manner. Like, it's very clear these people are bad,
mm-hmm.
that they're the villains of this film, and that Liz is, like, this innocent person trying to escape the situation.
And she's smart and they're stupid.
And that's also true.
It's, like, definitely, like, she's a human and they're, like,
they're not
low-key subhuman.
Except yes.
maybe the most freakish-looking one, Kino.
Kino is the only one who is actually trying to, like, get her out of this place. Not necessarily just for, like, her own, like, safety, but it's obvious he also cares a lot about Bertha and what's, like, going on.
He seems to have a heart, yeah.
Yes. I mean, well, he's also the one who loves dogs. He's mm-hmm. just, it seems like he's the more, like, human.
The most relatable.
Yeah, character. Of, like, all of these, like, horrifying people. And he notices how much, like, Eddie's obsession with Liz is taking a toll on Bertha and her health and how this story is probably going to play. I feel like he knew before anyone else what was going to happen.
I want to talk about the rape just a little bit. I don't want to, like, go too deep into it.
I did too.
Now, just what do you think you're doing here?
Well, you said to bring them suitcases in, and I got this eight-year-old bottle of whiskey just yearning to touch them pretty lips of yours. Just called to me from behind the bar down there. My old daddy used to say nothing like good liquor to warm the cold as heart.
Well, your daddy should have told you about entering a lady's room without being invited. If you leave now, there'll be nothing else said.
What do you want to say?
I just want to say there's some things that are into, like you were saying, it didn't feel like, Buggy, you were saying it didn't feel just kind of baselessly exploit. I always forget if it's exploitative or exploitive.
I think
either
it's
way.
Exploitive. I think it's like one of those you can say it either way.
She's never nude.
No.
Yeah, there's no nudity.
You don't see her tits or ass, right?
No.
Like there's the other like pinups he has around. So it doesn't feel gratuitous in that way.
It's not sexy at all.
No,
it's not.
Not
that rape ever is.
Intentionally.
But
sometimes in movies it is.
Yeah,
well,
sometimes
you can tell.
They do it just to like,
yeah.
We need a scene to show some TNA and like it ends up being a rape, which is always gross.
Yeah, like you see the body or, you know, a big thing in older movies is the woman like submits and the way she submits is like,
yeah,
participating. And she does not. It's very visceral. It's very uncomfortable and it is not sexy. So no. I think that is an important.
It's meant to illustrate just how horrible Eddie is, how horrible the situation is. Yeah. And also like her innocence. You know, yeah. There's a lot of symbolism. She's wearing white too, which I don't know if it's like intentional, but to me, it also feels like this innocent person being taken advantage of. She's also fighting the entire time.
She is, yeah.
And Eddie's not the only one that takes advantage of her. Also, there's a drunk in the bar that makes her do some stuff. And
he takes her. I think also that's one of the scariest scenes too, or like the most interesting shots is Bertha at some point, we'll get more into like Bertha and Liz's dynamic, does attempt to help her escape by asking someone who's drinking at her like bar or whatever to take her home.
Mm-hmm.
And he also tries to rape her. And in the corner you can see of like the mirror, Eddie's face pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a very interesting scene, and it plays, I think, into a lot of, like, historical and social dynamics. The way Eddie reacts to Liz's rape is, well, for one, he whips her with his belt. Mm-hmm. He beats her, and he says he's going to make a decent woman of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's playing into also this trope of, like, Liz is the seductress. How could these men help themselves? Like, how could, it's her fault that this is happening.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which we got, I mean, this is something, you know, we're three white people sitting around, but this is, it's one of those stereotype racist trope things is that, you know, black people are like overly sexual or sexualized. And it's like, well, you know,
and it's,
of course, you know, because look at her looking, but she's very buttoned up too. No, not that that's ever true,
of
but
course.
She's quite like, she's beautiful.
No, it's, and it's a historical and current excuse that's used to like excuse horrible
and
behavior.
And with like black children who look old, you know, that whole thing, mm-hmm. like it's like, they look, she's 12, but, you know, the way she was shaking her ass
I mean, black woman sexuality, beauty, and appeal being used to rationalize literal rape.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
Like, or, yeah, that idea that, well, they get othered or they get diminished, so, but she's a smart, articulate, professional woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I think that's interesting, too, that that's how they played it, you know?
Yeah.
Because you get, like you're saying, just like very innocent in that sense.
Like, yeah, it's very intentional, like in a lot of ways. So I do think this movie is making an obvious message and commentary, like that all of these people are horrifying.
They're fucked up and they're backwards and they're, yeah, there's no real like excuse, which obviously, but you know, 1975.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the last thing I'll note on the rape scene is that it really felt like, to me, it felt like a catalyst for the second half of the film.
Mm-hmm,
it definitely pushed it over into the horror category, especially the scene you're talking about where Eddie pops up in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment where you're almost like, oh, he's going to save her, but he doesn't. And like the whole scene is punctuated by this creepy sound design
mm-hmm.
and this very kind of scary, echoey dialogue over the top of it. And that is horrific. That is like peak horror, I think.
And it's like a nod to slavery, right?
Yeah.
Like now she's his. There's some like whipping kind of.
Yeah, for sure. So let's pivot to this conversation about Liz and Bertha's relationship, because this kind of builds off the racism topic
mm-hmm.
because clearly Bertha is a drunk old racist white person. But then there's this weird dynamic of, I don't want to say camaraderie, but she's the closest person.
Solidarity.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the closest person that Liz has to an out. And they almost have the same means to an end in mind here. It's like Bertha wants her out. Liz wants to get out.
Right.
Yeah,
and Bertha wants her out because she wants Eddie. And I mean, we should talk a little bit about the actresses. This is a good opportunity to do that. So, Shelley Winters is a legendary actress. She won multiple Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Uggams won a Tony, I think, pretty soon or pretty close before this movie came out. So they're both like, and that's the acting in this movie was pretty fucking good
mm-hmm.
for this kind of movie. It was
for sure. Yeah, better than you would expect.
Well, I mean, it had like a cast of people who are well, not everybody, but the two women especially.
The most important people in this film did, like, amazing and had, like, very phenomenal performances.
And, you know, I'll let you guys really talk about their relationship more. But one thing about Shelley Winters, too, is it's this weird thing in this movie where, and not, I've seen her play this character, I think, more than once. You know, she's washed up. She's so fat. She's not. She's no. cute.
Well, she's not that
she's
old.
She's not in, like, starlet mode anymore. No. But it is this kind of funny thing that she's probably, what do you think, 40?
Yeah, like, at most 50. And, yeah, she's not, like, perfectly skinny, but she's not overweight by any means.
Yeah, but it's this thing that now she's, and I feel like I've seen her, you know, she played Roseanne's mom on Roseanne. Mm. Same kind of deal. I mean, she was larger then because she was in her 70s or whatever. But yeah, I think that's interesting. It's like, it happens a lot in older movies where the woman who's washed up, you're like,
she's not really that.
She's still, like, probably ovulating.
Yeah. Like,
she's, you know, still in the mother zone, not in the crone, you know? Yeah, so that's one thing I wanted to say. And, yeah, who wants to talk about the relationship?
Well, I want
to
let Buggy take the lead because I know this is one of the, like, key
main
topics
she, you were, yeah.
she keyed in on. So
yeah. No, we can both share this, but I, like, had my own, like, quick summary of Bertha as a character. Mm-hmm. She's a washed-up, depressed, insecure former showgirl or, like, Hollywood star who develops a complicated relationship with the successful singer Liz Weatherly. Bertha attempts to help Liz through a certain solidarity, but ultimately is weak and willing to do anything to not be alone. Mm-hmm. And her character, I think, is so important to this movie because it's really, I think, the dynamic between Liz and Bertha is playing off of so much, like, real, deep-rooted, like, issues. Mm-hmm. And I also mentioned Bertha's hatred and resentment towards this young, successful Black woman it's, like, startling, but not exactly surprising. Bertha's no longer desirable, no longer wanted, nor will she be remembered.
Eddie's, like, her last shot, right?
Exactly. And that's what she says. I have a quote about that. And by surprising, I just mean, like, it could be any girl, but it's also, like, playing off of race, but
it adds another,
like, dynamic and layer. And her character is referencing the very present historical resentment certain white women have towards Black women, mm-hmm. demonizing creative expression, ingenuity, success. This is, like, a very prevalent thing. Mm-hmm. And feeling threatened by white men viewing Black women as desirable, which sparks, like, tension with extreme repercussions, like, in the world and socially. So that's why I think this relationship is so key, because it's I think, the most, like, interesting,
yeah,
and, like, rich.
It adds, like, a something to it that's, yes, not just, like, the exploitation. But
no.
Have you seen the Amy Schumer show skit, The Last Fuckable Day, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
No.
And they, like, put her on a raft.
Send her out.
Do you know
that.
What I'm talking about? She's, like, it's her last fuckable day as an actress. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, she is still, I'd hit that now. I think she's, like, 70, but, you know, she's a babe. But it is that idea that it's, like, you have your timeline, and that's where they bond, too.
That is, and that's what I was going to say, is that's the only, like, point I feel like Bertha, like, relates to with Liz is, you know, she's a former starlet, so she gives Liz advice, because mm-hmm. when also Liz is trying to confide in Bertha, I'd already mentioned, like, what Bertha said after Liz had told her about the rape, mm-hmm. but Liz on that same line asks her, like, what kind of woman are you?
Yeah.
And Bertha responds, the kind who suspects she's had it.
I wrote that down too.
You don't think so now, honey, but the time will come. You will understand exactly what somebody mm-hmm. like poor little Eddie will mean to you, which is also very important. Like, I don't feel like Eddie is as important in this film. Like, he's, like, the vehicle of evil for sure. But, like, he's kind of, like,
a dumb shit.
He's just, yeah, he's kind of just there. And he's just,
yeah, he's a hollow man.
Yeah. yeah.
And the women are fleshed out.
He's
though.
Strong mm-hmm. and, like, evil and very, like, obviously mentally unstable.
Yeah.
And he's more of, like, a sort of metaphor for, like, this starlet's last chance at, like, not being alone and not feeling like she has no, like point in this world, no place. Like, he's the only thing grounding her. And that's kind of what, like, he represents to her, Whereas to Liz, he's just this horrifying monster who wants to use her for, like, her fame.
Right.
And, like, her, you know, I mean, all of the, like, supposed benefits of being a famous star. Like, he sees Liz as a vehicle to fund his own wants and needs.
And he wants to fuck her.
He wants to fuck her. It's true, but it's more sort of just, like, a gross,
like, coattail. Need
to consume and, like, completely own her as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I think you covered everything that I possibly could have wanted to cover. Yeah, what's
the male? I
want to
hear the male perspective. Yeah, though, what did on you? Because
me and Cody both were... clocked this. Like, yeah, we this both was agreed.
What you were both.
Oh,
this
yeah,
is
we
the
were
most
clocking.
Interesting thing.
Clocking.
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought their dynamic was so interesting just because Bertha comes off as such a sort of despicable, spiteful person that clearly is just jealous of Liz and wants Eddie to herself, but then there is this interesting dynamic of her recognizing a young star that has gone, that may go through things that she has.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a real interesting moment when they have that conversation, because she is still not a great person, but no. There's an actual connection there.
I feel for her.
Yeah.
Though.
There is
I
a
do.
Layer of, like, sympathy, especially towards the end, because you can just sort of see, like, Bertha, like, disintegrating.
And
like,
what a psycho Eddie is. Like, well, you kind exactly. of feel, you kind of feel earlier, like, they're all fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, and she's using him, too. But then later, it's kind of like, he's really fucked
Eddie's
up.
Eddie's evil. Yeah. And I would say also Bertha's a villain just in the sense that she's ultimately complicit in,
yes,
like, everything
totally,
that happens,
totally.
Which is also a great symbolism for, like, actual, like, shit. Like, that's a common trope and a common theme of, like, white men being abusive and white women, like, abiding and sitting by that happening, mm-hmm, sort of on the sidelines.
Yeah.
But he loves me.
Yeah, and you feel for her because you're, like, this poor, drunk, miserable idiot,
yeah,
like, really thinks she's gonna marry Eddie. That also, like, that made me feel really bad when she thought that, like, Eddie
dress.
Was gonna marry her.
Yeah.
That was a rough one. You did feel for Bertha.
Yeah.
You were like, ooh, no.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why that character is so interesting, because you want to hate her because she does come off as pretty despicable and kind of pathetic, but then you feel sorry for her and you understand where she's coming from in a lot of ways. And
uh-huh.
I think that's a fascinating dynamic there.
It is.
She owns the fucking place. Kick
yeah.
his ass out.
Yeah, but she can't.
I know.
Because she doesn't, like, he's also
her
shifted the dynamic.
Is, like, tied up.
Of, yeah, like, she's nothing
also, he's
without
violent,
him.
So.
He is violent. He's,
yeah.
Well, he gets violent. I don't
but
know.
But who knows what has happened along the years with the two of them,
right,
you know?
Exactly.
It's true.
These things don't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah.
No.
Well, okay. So, yeah, those are the key. I think Liz, Bertha, obviously, are the key characters in this. And the men are all kind of cartoonish villains,
yes,
or, like, particularly evil villains,
mm-hmm,
in the case of Eddie. But there are a lot of interesting characters in this. I kind of wanted to just blast through some of them and talk about them a little bit. We've talked about Eddie a little bit, who is clearly a Elvis wannabe country singer.
Smoke-filled bar and my guitar in my hand. The kids sure miss you and they hate the shape they'll see me in. I know I'll never love another in my life. You were my woman, my inspiration, my loving wife.
And in the beginning, from my perspective, I thought, you know, his primary motivation was just to make it in showbiz.
Mm-hmm.
And as you noted, Liz was his ticket when she showed up. But that all changes after the rape. And then Eddie begins to focus on making her his possession,
mm-hmm,
aka his wife, which really changes the dynamic there. So I thought that was interesting. But Eddie is a creepy dude. He just, like,
he is.
The actor looks creepy. And this is one thing I noted earlier that I wanted to talk about, because I was trying to figure out what creeped me out about him. And it came down to his smile.
Mm-hmm.
His smile is creepy alone, but it pivots into a grimace, like, flawlessly. His smile just turns into, like, an evil grimace, which I guess is, like, props to the actor for,
mm-hmm,
being able to do that. but it reminded me of Bobby from Twin Peaks, who does a similar thing with his mouth. He, like, has this smile that can get evil, like, really quickly. So I thought that was an interesting
note. Mean Bobby, right? Not Bob.
I said Bobby.
Oh, no, I know. I'm just making sure.
Yeah.
Just
oh, yeah. Clarity. Not yes. Bob.
No,
yeah.
Not Bobby.
Not Bob, Bob the demon. Because
Bob does that, too. Bob, like...
Yeah, I guess so. That's a good point.
But he mostly
yeah,
just
Bob
does...
Bob and Bobby do that.
Does the, oh, like, weird,
I didn't even think
grin.
About that.
Well, I think there's the... And we're not going to get into Twin Peaks, but I think there's some Bob, Bobby, and Mike kind of stuff going on.
But then I wanted to talk about Kino a little bit, who is kind of our hero in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And he is an interesting character because he clearly is not into his situation, even though he's sort of a subservient worker at this locale. And he kind of comes to the rescue near the end. But what do you think his deal is? And what's his deal with dogs?
I don't. This is a thing that I also think is strange that I've noticed is... In, like, multiple scenes during the rape, there's also the dog thing, but that's kind of, I think, more, like, pointing towards, like, a different thing thematically.
Yeah, the juxtaposition of the dogs and the
but
rape.
But Kino also, I can't remember exactly. I think it's, yeah, it's after, and this is also bringing up, you know, another character and their motivation. After Sheriff Orville takes Liz to this, like, terrifying, like, probably the scariest country
bar.
Yeah,
I think so. They go to the VFW because the Justice of the Peace is
who's also,
who is
an interesting
also
character.
A villain, Floyd. Yes. He is, like, a very intense, nasty person.
Mm-hmm.
Liz is going basically through a humiliation ritual to, like, supposedly get justice for her rape. And this horrible thing happens at the bar. We can talk about, like, a little more when we talk about maybe Floyd or whatever. But while that's happening, Kino is with his dog and he's like forlornly petting his dog and is like very sad and contemplating.
I think he might be looking for the other dog. Right?
Yeah, or something like that. And I think also that kind of adds to his character. Like he likes animals. He's also, like Cody was saying, in a subservient role. So maybe he can also just... He has empathy because he just knows how cruel these people can be.
I get the feeling he's been with them for, or her. Get the feeling her. That he's been with her Bertha, for a long time as like her, because she owns the property. He's like the hired help, right?
Yeah.
But he's probably been there maybe even since she was famous. I think he might be kind of simple.
I don't know, because he clearly can see the evil in Eddie before
sure,
anyone
but
else
I think,
is.
I mean, as we were, like, I really do think he's the most relatable.
He is.
And he presents as a giant, but apparently he did not have gigantism, but he really...
He has the same voice as Jaws.
He has the same voice as Jaws. He has... He looks like Jaws and Andre the Giant.
And he's also just super, super fucking
he's
tall.
He's 6'8", I think is what I saw.
I guess that's not...
I mean, yeah.
That's not tall.
Well, it's just maybe, I don't know how, like, how tall was Andre the Giant?
I don't know, but I think it doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with, like, actual markers of gigantism. But he died at 46, too. So I'm like, are you guys sure
he looks like Lurch.
He is Lurch, by the way.
He's Lurch?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I meant to say that earlier. He's Lurch. Yes, yes.
He's Lurch, bro. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
And you're telling me he's not a giant?
I mean, I read that his son said he's not a giant.
Well,
so I mean,
maybe more than a couple people are in denial about this whole situation.
Yeah, I think he's a giant.
I'll fight his son.
Yeah,
he's a giant.
If he's still
son 6'7".
Yeah.
So I mean, I think maybe that's enough time on him. But so
yeah,
Dub Taylor plays Floyd. He talks like this. You can't understand fucking shit. You can't understand. Like, oh, well, what are you doing? Yeah. You know,
and
it's
he's
like
the judge of the town.
Yeah, he's the justice of the peace.
And him and Orville have some very interesting, like, conversations about, like, tradition and, like, it's very, like, us versus the city folk.
This is where the idea of good old boys comes from.
Yeah,
you know?
it's like,
these kind of, you know, his belly's out. He's wearing his Pabst Blue Ribbon t-shirt he's officiating.
A piece of shit.
Sorry, I'm allowed to do that voice.
Yeah, you are. She's from the South.
No, I'm not.
I want to talk about Sheriff Orville, also played by the great Slim Pickens.
Yeah.
Because he has some great lines in this, and I'm going to try to work some of those into this. But he's very cartoonish as well. He almost, like, plays up his redneck hick character.
For sure.
100%.
Hey, Orville, would you like to suck on a tomato?
No, I would not like to suck on a tomato, Sheriff.
You don't mind if I do. They're awful good.
Mm. Yeah, we noted he's got this disabled son who he's always slapping around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just screaming, hooting, yeah, and hollering.
He's an interesting character. Almost comic relief if he wasn't also kind
of
bad.
Both he and Justice of the Peace, Floyd, I feel like are funny, but it's not funny. Because
they're just, what they're doing and what they're saying is like so nasty.
But they are definitely the laughing stocks, right?
Yes.
Like, yep. They have power, though, so it makes a different... Which is also a reason I think this film is kind of anti-racist. Is like, this is the pillars. This is the where the power is located, and these people are fucking idiots.
They're stupid. Yeah. He's like doodling like pictures of boobs.
Oh, that's so. While Liz is reporting her rape to the sheriff,
also she's arrested. To clarify,
well, first of all, she gets arrested, and then she reports her rape to the sheriff, and he's like, "I'll take notes," but he's drawing doodles of her and Eddie fucking or something?
And also asking her these horrible questions.
Oh yeah, he bite your titties, girl?
Yeah, like he's asking he's like, no, I'm just asking this because I have to know like how brutal it was. But you can tell like he's enjoying this. He's enjoying
I don't want to ruin the quotes you might use, but he warm you up a little bit at least first. And it's
no,
like,
I wasn't going to use that one, but no, that's a good,
it's
good one.
It's awful. So he's so like up. Nasty. He's just super gross.
Oh, at least, you know, and he's like, spit on his
you're
dick.
You're going to charge Eddie for real rape?
Real rape.
That's something, the one I was going to use.
You can still use it, but.
I'll put it in anyways. Yeah.
I want to press charges against Eddie Collins.
What kind of charges?
Well, for starters, assault, theft for auto, kidnapping, and rape.
Now, just a goddamn minute, gal. You mean you want to charge poor Eddie with rape? Real rape?
You better believe it, Sheriff.
Real rape, you know, as opposed to...
It's so crazy that he says it that way, too. He's just the whole time like, really? Eddie?
Yeah, so I think that is kind of one of the things, especially on a second watch, that made me lean towards this movie is trying to say something. Racist cops are bad.
What?
Yeah. A cab.
Really? Now, did old Eddie, the rapist, did he bite you on titties?
What?
Okay. So this episode's starting to run long.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So my last topic, I think I'm just going to gloss over because it's not super important, which was going to just be a general discussion about all the weird shit in this movie. But I feel like we've covered a lot of it. But I just wanted to, you know, we've noted that like all the characters other than Liz are crazy and weird. And I saw one quote that said this movie it's like Deliverance meets Twin Peaks meets Mandingo meets Leslie Uggam, which I kind of liked.
Because, yeah, she's just kind of doing her thing. But Leslie Uggam's, real quick, Tony Award winning actress. Had her own variety show. So, like, a star, too, like Shelley Winters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We did go long because we haven't recorded in a while and we're excited.
Well, there's a lot to talk
and
about.
And this is
this
a
movie.
Hell of a pick.
An interesting film.
It's got so many interesting components to it to pick apart that, you know, it makes sense that we would run long. But.
And are we going to do thoughts and feelings, or you feel like we already did them?
We can do thoughts and feelings. Yeah, we have to, I think.
Mine's a quick.
Yeah,
I can do quick, too.
My quick thing is, it wasn't a very long movie. It's got a lot really interesting stuff, but it still dragged for me at some points. Do you know what I mean? Like, there were points where I was like,
Yeah, the stuff that makes it feel like a drama.
Yeah, that,
and then also, I think it's sometimes just kind of, like, tiring to watch suffering, too. Like, we're so
that's
tired from watching this horrible thing.
It's
but
true, though.
It
it's
is,
real.
It is, like,
moral
it's
outrage.
Disheartening. So I think that adds to it. Like, you don't, like, want to see these, like, terrible things happening to this woman.
You just want to get through it to the revenge,
you
which also,
her to-
the revenge is, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but the revenge...
Doesn't
isn't
feel
the biggest
like it.
Payoff.
It doesn't like, because it also leaves so much to be like determined. It's like, did she get revenge exact? Is she going to be okay?
I think her car's
I don't know. I don't think she's going to be okay.
She's
that's
gonna be okay.
What I
she
I
will never
really
be
don't
okay,
think,
but
I don't even,
she's going to get out of there.
That's what I'm wondering.
But
is
all
she going to get out of there?
Yeah, there's all the other hits.
And she just has one gun. Like, that's
and
what
I'm
saying.
And does she have the keys to her Bentley or Rolls or
just,
whatever?
Yeah.
Seems kind of like,
Ooh. Yeah, so that's kind of my thoughts and feelings where it was kind of a hard watch. And I hate when dogs die, so that's another, like, not spoiler, but trigger thing.
That one was at least a little, like, you didn't see the dog die, but...
But you know, like, you knew it was going
to
happen.
In comparison to all of the other stuff, like that to me was just, if anything, it was just more like an indicator Eddie's officially fucking lost it, as opposed to me being like, oh my God.
Yeah. And that's on the horror tip too. The levels of like depravity that we get to with people does push it over into horror.
It does. Yeah. It gets pretty nasty for sure.
That's, one more thing, sorry, is the cinematography was good. And I think the DP, who's also one of the directors, mm-hmm. really was trying to do something. It starts out with some pretty good shots. There's some stuff he leans on, but it had some really beautiful moments of film.
I loved too, like, and this is part of my thoughts and feelings, like, the cinematography I feel like is so, like, important to the whole vibe of this film. Like, one of my favorite scenes in this film is when Eddie takes Liz for a ride after the rape. The waterfall. It's such a good, I feel like, symbolism for how, like, trapped Liz feels in this moment.
He's trapped in the house.
But, yeah, the waterfall scene, the cinematography in that is, like, especially incredible because I feel like it just adds to Liz's, like, feeling of being trapped. She's in, like, this confined space with her rapist who's trying to, like, act like nothing happened.
Which that for us watching that on the Blu-ray today versus the original transfer we watched was night and day.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't even tell what was going on the one we watched on Fossum TV.
Mm-hmm. Fossum.
But yeah, I have like complicated feelings and thoughts because I think it's hard to say like I liked this movie because like how does one like such a film? But I think it was really good and I didn't enjoy watching it, but I enjoyed, like, the progression of the story, and I also had, like, it just was very interesting to research on this, too, and, like, dissect the dynamics of this film. So that's my thoughts and feelings. Great cinematography, very interesting.
Great acting. Discussion.
Yeah, amazing acting from the two, like, main female leads. Yes.
Yeah, I want to piggyback on what you said about, you know, it wasn't necessarily a fun watch, but it was good, and I felt like I was getting an experience from watching it, and the acting was totally fantastic. Whether it was the kind of comedic slash evil characters or the female characters really being fleshed out in a way that I feel like you don't see in movies from the 70s in the exploitation realm. And yeah, the cinematography really worked, especially when they got creepy. I think the cinematography played into it being a horror film. I want to note the sound design and the score was really fascinating.
Yeah.
It was really weird at some points, the music they chose. Some of the sound design just got completely unhinged, and I really appreciated that. And that was another component that I think pushed it over into the horror realm as well as the sound design. Really, like, if they would have just went with some standard country music and that's it, I think maybe you would argue that this isn't a horror film, but some of the sound choices were really important for how this film felt.
Yeah, we were talking about Arrow Beach as we were watching, you know? Like, remember how fucking weird that soundtrack was? And this one was like, okay, this is tension-building, scary music that sounds good and fits.
For sure. So I think overall, I'm really glad that we watched this, and I think it's a great pick, and I've never heard of it in my life. It's like completely out of left field, and I think it's a great discovery. So let's do a little obscurity rating to see how obscure this son of a gun is. IMDb votes 985.
It's amazing to find that.
Under 1,000 there. However, there were 37 IMDb critic reviews, so this is clearly something people in the critic community are keeping tabs on.
No.
There was only one Rotten Tomato review, which isn't surprising because Rotten Tomatoes seems to not give a shit about old movies.
Old movies, yeah.
And you can watch this on 6 digital platforms right now, including Blu-ray and DVD if you've got a movie store near you. All in all, with our metrics, it's a 6.5. Okay. However, I feel like it's more obscure than that, other than kind of the critic response.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like I almost want to give it an honorary 1-point bump or something, but, you know, we don't stray from our rating
system. You have
system.
The power.
I have no power.
You're the leader of this pack.
The integrity of our rating system must be intact.
Okay, you guys.
Okay, let's do the thing that we do.
Oh, God, I'm scared.
Where we get scared. We're going to vote on whether or not this is a gem. And everyone's cringing and writhing in pain.
Power corrupts.
And losing their bells upon their shorts.
Oh.
On the count of 3, we shall give a thumbs up or a thumbs down on whether we think this is a horror gem. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
What are you doing over there?
I'm doing a like half.
Oh, she can do it now because we're both. Okay, okay.
But I'm leaning towards up.
Okay, nice. What we have here is 2 thumbs up and 1 halfy that is leaning up.
Yes,
the half chub. We got a half chub.
We do.
And overall, semi. I'm just going to say this is pretty much
it's a
voted a gem across the board.
I mean, is Deliverance a classic?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a gem. I only did like the sideways because I think this movie is good and I honestly would recommend it to anyone who like enjoys horror.
Who hasn't been raped.
right. Maybe not anyone, but someone who like genuinely is interested in like, you know, horror movies.
Especially
likes
the exploitation. People are really into exploitation. I feel like this is a
subgenre.
Yeah. And I think that this is maybe a hidden gem for the folks that are really totally into the exploitation side of the genre.
So. And I do think it does a good job of, while like depicting that, not actually like being exploitive towards the lead actress.
Mm-hmm. No, the rape and the racism both feel appropriate.
Yeah, like, or at least like the way they're handling this is like, care. Oh God, it's so hard.
They're not sexy.
No.
The people who are acting that way are fucking disgusting and
you don't like them.
You don't get off on it. And I can't see even like the most like disgusting racist internet toad getting off
no,
on
or
the
enjoying
racism
this because it's very clearly not geared towards people like that. I just kind of am conflicted just based off of some of the like producers and like some questions about like the material this was based off of. That's kind of why I did the sideways.
Other than that,
I think it's a gem, like without a doubt. This movie's good.
Sometimes your philosophical heroes bone an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
But sometimes your producers are the Scarface of porn child and animal porn. And produced an anti-racist film once in a while.
Yeah, that's the only reason why I was like leaning towards it was never going to be down though. There's just no way. This movie's good. It's a good movie.
Yeah, good find, dude. You're like batting 1,000.
Thank you, ChatGPT.
Oh, fuck that. Why are you still saying GBT?
It's funner for me. Don't take this away from me. You took away Dennis for me.
Funner.
You took away Library
Ballet.
From me.
Ballet.
Ballet. Ballet. Submarine. Ballet. Submarine.
Oh, my God.
Take away all my fun
Your
ways.
Little joys. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Last but not least, it's time for special time.
It's special time. And it's my special time.
Hell yeah,
all mine. Okay, this is going to be kind of quick because this episode is like pretty long. But
it's a long go.
I had announced this last episode that my like special time was going to be just like diving a little bit into the Southern Gothic genre. So I wanted to just like talk about that a little bit. The first thing I have is just this kind of a longer quote from this Oxford article describing what is Southern Gothic.
Yeah, give it to
me. I want
to
know that as well. Yeah, me too.
Right, but actually, wait, before I do that, sorry, what is Gothic also?
Yeah, that's another. Because the Goths were a people.
That's another thing I'm going to start with, because there's Gothic and then Southern Gothic as a subgenre. I'm sure there are other like Gothic genres, but I feel like these are the most prevalent ones.
Mm-hmm.
So this like says the Gothic genre became like more popular in 1764 with the specific novel that was published called The Castle of Otranto, or Otranto is how you would say it, which is considered the first Gothic novel.
Ooh.
Within Gothic literature, there are themes of romance, horror, and the prevailing atmosphere of mystery and terror. The term Gothic is a reference to the architecture of medieval buildings and ruins, which often serve as inspiration and backdrop in Gothic novels, with dark and mysterious castles and manors, with subterranean passages, dark battlements, hidden panels, and trapdoors. Gothic literature generally challenged Enlightenment principles, giving voice to irrational, horrific, and transgressive thoughts, desires, and impulses. The golden age of Gothic literature is defined as beginning in the late 18th century to the end of like the 19th century. And the most popular subset of Gothic literature is Southern Gothic literature, which from this article started in the early 19th century. And I have a definition. What is Southern Gothic literature? What sets it apart from Gothic literature?
Mm-hmm.
It's still kind of the same. It's just the specific topics we're targeting. So it's like a focus on
morbid things.
Yes.
And I get the architecture.
I think the romance angle.
The romance too. Because also I think the key thing is transgressive too. Because a lot of Gothic novels, early and newer, are like usually picking apart, maybe I have transgressive like kind of wrong as a definition, but I think it's like picking apart aspects of society or like making a larger commentary. Against
the dominant culture.
Yeah, against the like grain of what is like considered like
transgression is like a synonym for a sin.
Yeah. So it's like it's diving into controversial topics that like are considered taboo.
Okay.
And Southern Gothic is a motor genre prevalent in literature from the early 19th century. To this day, characteristics of Southern Gothic include the presence of irrational, horrific, and transgressive thoughts. But more specifically, Southern Gothic brings to light the extent to which the idealistic vision of the pastoral Agrarian? I would say that word is kind of
agrarian.
Agrarian.
That's like farming.
Yeah. South rests on massive repressions of the religion or region's historical realities. So like slavery, racism, and patriarchy. Southern Gothic texts also mark a Freudian return of the repressed. The region's historical realities take concrete forms in the shapes of ghosts. And like the gaslight all that has been unsaid in the official version of Southern history. So it's, as stated, it's basically just picking apart at this like idealistic version of Southern culture and Southern history and identity, and talking about sort of the ghosts from the past that still haunt people to this day.
Like nobody gets out of slavery with their hands clean.
So some examples. What are Southern Gothic books? I think one of the most famous ones is Beloved. That's probably one of the most
Beloved.
Why do I always say Beloved?
Because it could be like, either way, but yes.
It's Beloved, which is part of a trilogy, actually, and it's by Toni Morrison, who's like a very amazing scholarly writer. Love her.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very devastating book about essentially the ghost of slavery and how it like haunts and still affects, like it causes like generational trauma.
Right.
But also it's highlighting a woman who has, escaped from slavery or after slavery has been abolished, her reconciling with sort of the ghost of her past and this child Beloved who she lost, and how that sort of just encapsulates all of her trauma surrounding literally being enslaved.
Yeah.
It's a very sad book. I think it's really popular to read in college too. I think there's a lot of like different classes that like use this book as a reference point. So it's very famous. To Kill a Mockingbird is considered Southern Gothic.
Oh, interesting.
The Sound and the Fury.
Oh, Faulkner.
Mm-hmm. As I Lay Dying, also by William Faulkner.
He's great. I don't know about you guys, that's a good book. Fucking have you ever read it? Faulkner. No. I'm sure.
I had a friend tell me that at the end of As I Lay Dying, he threw it at the wall.
My grandma gave it to me because it was one of her favorite books.
In Cold Blood.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, but okay.
A Streetcar Named Desire mm-hmm. is also considered that. I want to bring to attention some of my favorite. Oh, also Cormac McCarthy. Blood Meridian is considered Southern Gothic.
Oh.
But it's a little bit more leaning towards like
Western
and like Central America.
I'm interested
America.
In this. Okay, I'm going to like, read up on this more.
Child of God also, which I think that one sticks. That one makes sense to me. But some of my favorite books are also part of this subgenre. I want to shout out Harry Cruz. I think he's one of my favorite authors. He's from Alma, Georgia.
That's my girl.
He's a very good writer. And I personally really, really like the book A Feast of Snakes. It's one of my like favorite books I've read.
Ooh, that's
like,
on my
thus
list.
Far.
We have it.
It's you I have a copy have of it.
Copies. Ooh, I'll borrow it from you.
And it's genuinely like a book. And I think you kind of said the same thing, like, because you read it, Mom, where like it kind of changed my life or like perspective.
Yeah.
And it made me like way more intrigued in like Southern Gothic, like that genre.
Well, I
as a
read
whole.
It when I was probably about your age now. So it's definitely it's, like a rite of passage.
It's an incredible it's book. It's super messed up. It's disgusting. It's vulgar.
It is.
But it's also, again, like funny. A very interesting book commenting on a lot of these like, you know, perceived like idealistic, you know, South.
And from a white person who benefits from the systems, who is like stepping outside of it to be like, this is fucked.
This is, he's like very much picking apart in like a very satirical way, but also not.
Yeah.
Like with these horrible caricatures of like rural Southern people in Georgia. And another book that I really love is Exquisite Corpse, which also is technically Southern Gothic. And that's by Poppy Z. Bright, who is a very interesting author. And that's really just sort of about, being queer. It's about being queer in the 90s. It's sort of basing itself off of like prevalent serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer and also the British counterpart Dennis Nielsen. And it's about two serial killers who fall in love in New Orleans.
Sexy New Orleans.
And it's also disgusting. You know, you said your friend threw a book at the wall. I finished this book and I threw that book at the wall because it upset me in so many ways. But it's a very interesting book. It's considered a transgressive novel. It picks apart a bunch of different fucked up stuff. You know, the AIDS crisis, racism, like first generation immigrants. It's a very good book, but it is also really fucked up and really, really nasty. But I love it. So yeah, that's just a little tidbit. I think this is a great subgenre that I like. Wish, honestly, there was more content for. Like, I wish there were more movies. There's a lot. And more books, but it's currently like my favorite. There's just so many interesting stories.
She got that Harry Cruz fever.
Yeah, and also My Sweet Audrina is considered Southern Gothic. V.C. Andrews. She is considered Southern Gothic. Flowers in the Attic.
Incest.
And yeah, I think it's just a really cool means of picking apart a bunch of fucked up social issues, and it's always usually interesting themes going on, usually supernatural elements. I'm a big fan. So yeah, I just wanted to highlight a genre I think is underrated and I think more people should explore because it's very cool.
Buggy says, read a book.
Hell yeah.
Read a book!
I know, I should maybe try that.
You've
never learned to read.
Books.
They're very good.
I'll shout out a movie that's a big, big-ass horror movie, actually, in this subgenre, which I did a 180 on. Is The Skeleton Key.
I knew. I almost wanted to say that. The
Skeleton
Key. Because
the first time I watched it, I wasn't really impressed. And then I came back to it years later and I was like, this movie's actually real good.
It handles like slavery and ghosts pretty well for like a genre, like that time.
A big
that
movie too.
Budget,
yeah.
Kate Hudson. You know.
Well, thank you for the history lesson because I don't know jack shit about Gothic or Southern Gothic.
I get confused because Goth and Gothic
it's
get
just
thrown around.
One's sort of like an overarching like castle vibe where the other one's specifically like, the South isn't some fun, cute, happy-go-lucky place.
Go have
there's
your
a
wedding
bunch
on
of
a plantation
shit that's
or
like
whatever.
Haunting people. And there's a lot of like, I mean, people say it too, like the atmosphere and the energy, like you can feel.
Yeah.
You can feel it.
Cool. Okay.
We did it.
Beth
we did
is
it,
up.
Jess.
Beth is up next. Do you have a movie picked out yet?
Yay. Fuck no.
That's okay. Going to be exciting. It's going to be a surprise.
It's going to be a surprise, and I just want to say the next time we publish an episode, Cody will be done with chemotherapy.
Yeah! Fuck cancer!
Hey, come on now.
There's more to do.
Don't jinx me.
I'm not jinxing you, but you'll be done with eight rounds of chemo.
I might just continue doing it as
just for fun,
yeah.
Yeah.
Can you do that? Can you just go get chemo if you don't have cancer?
It's a supplement.
I mean, if you have the money.
Scamanda? Yes. No, anyway.
Did she get chemo, though, actually?
No, she just pretended to.
Like
anyway,
me.
He's a champion.
I'm a Scamanda.
But now I see how she could do that, because I could just walk in there and sit with a little thingy and pretend. If I had a friend in there.
What do you think I'm doing?
Oh, shit. It's just been juice all this time.
Yeah, okay.
Ginger ale.
Creepy, psychedelic country.
Country. Well, y'all have a good night now.
Yeah,
right?
Y'all stay safe now. Bless
all
y'all. Don't
let that woman
heart.
Sleep alone. You gotta let a woman like that sleep alone.
Never that. Bye bye now.
Eddie knows a lot about Poontang. Don't know nothing about women.
The sound.
On a gym hunt.
Huh?